Welcome to Financial Peace University, Lesson 8, Real Estate and Mortgages.
Please welcome Dave Ramsey. Woo!
Yeah! Awesome! Awesome! Thank you.
How many of you are like me? You've been on a great vacation, or maybe a not-so-great vacation where you traveled. Or maybe you were traveling for work. I travel a lot. I speak all over the world and do a lot of media appearances and everything. So traveling. And how many of you know what I'm talking about? When you travel like that and you come home, it's good to be home. Oh, there's nothing like that word. That word is emotional. That word touches our spirit. Home. Say it with me.
Home.
Jesus said, "The foxes have holes and the birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." When we as Christians start talking about heaven, we talk about going home. We talk about that sometimes at a funeral. We call it a homecoming or a homegoing. And the idea of home is rooted in our spirits. It's rooted in who we are. And so as we talk about real estate and mortgages tonight, I want you to think about home as more than just a financial transaction. Because I am convinced one of the reasons that we in America have prospered so financially is we are actually the very first culture in the history of the world that the average typical citizen owns real estate. And that sense of stability, that sense of home, the aristocracy, the wealthy in most cultures of the world were the only ones that owned their homes. In our culture, it's normal to own your home. Now, maybe with a mortgage, but you own it. You control it. There's this sense of spiritual, emotional, relational stability from which you're able to go out and do things economically. And I think that's one of the reasons, spiritually, that America has prospered, is we have home. Say it again.
Home.
And the great American dream is home ownership. You know, if you ask people, what's the great American dream? They often say either owning your own business or owning your own home. And yet, if you do this home ownership thing wrong, it's such a huge transaction that it becomes not the great American dream, but instead the great American nightmare. I mean, it's not a blessing, it's a curse. It's not a good thing, it's a problem. It's not a thing that causes me to have peace in my family. It causes stress in my family when it's done improperly and in the wrong order and things aren't laid out the way they're supposed to be. The numbers don't crunch properly. So we're going to walk through that in this lesson to make sure that we get this right. Now let's review the baby steps right quick. Baby step one is $1,000. Say it again. Baby step two then is we're going to work the debt snowball where we pay off our debts smallest to largest in that order. Baby step two is the debt snowball. Say baby step two. Baby step three is we're going to finish the emergency fund with 3 to 6 months of expenses set aside. We talked about that in the super savings lesson, and that's a fully funded emergency fund. Say 3 to 6.
3 to 6.
Then baby step four is 15% of your income is going into retirement. Baby step five is kids' college. And then that's going to bring us to this real estate lesson with baby step six, which is pay off your home early. Now, I will tell you that the average family going through Financial Peace University, the average family listening to me on the radio that writes me and tells me their story or read the book, The Total Money Makeover, and writes me and tells me their story, the anecdotal evidence and some of the actual research that we have gives us this. It usually takes about a month to get that first $1,000 set aside. It takes about 18 to 24 months to get, on average, all of your debts paid off except your home in baby step two. Baby step three is finish the emergency fund. That usually takes another 6 months or so. So 2-3 years to get through those first three baby steps. Here's what's interesting. By the time we get to baby step six, we're seeing families that are participating in this with focus, with intentionality, working together as a couple, as we've taught you, for those of you that are married, working with accountability for those of you that are single, we're seeing them pay off their home on average in about 7 years. Now, that means that some people are taking 12 or 15, and some people are doing it really, really fast because their home was almost paid for. But the average is running about 7 years to get through baby step six. Now, how do we do this? Again, intentionality with our money. Making the money behave, giving every dollar an assignment, and that means we're doing the budget every month before the month begins for the rest of our lives. And especially while you're in the class, you're working the budget forms, you're bringing them in, you're showing your coordinator, you're being accountable, you're being held accountable in that process, and it causes you to shift your behavior to where you're looking forward with your money instead of looking back going, where'd it went? Where'd it go? Where'd it go? And so that's how this is happening. Now, let's first talk about renting, because there's a lot of misnomers about renting. Automatically, when someone says so-and-so is a renter, so-and-so is renting, we immediately think, oh, they shouldn't be doing that. They ought to buy. That is not true. Not everyone at every situation should buy right then. We want to get ourselves in order so that we do buy a home, but buying a home out of order becomes a problem rather than a blessing. So, when do we rent? There's nothing wrong with renting for a little while. This demonstrates patience and wisdom. As an example, I recommend when a young couple first gets married that the first thing they do is they wait a year to buy. They need to spend that year piling up cash, getting all their baby steps worked out, getting on the same page, learning to work together. And I always joke, but it's not much of a joke to tell that young couple when they first get married, it takes a year of marriage to know how close to your mother-in-law to buy. And we all kind of laugh at that, but there's some truth to that actual statement. But what we're saying is we got to know how to work together on things. And we've got to know that before we make a home purchase. So that's an example when you're being patient and you're waiting, and it's a good thing to rent. Another example would be if something bad happened, like maybe you went through a divorce or you were widowed or you're a widower, you lost your spouse. In the middle of that grief, in the middle of all that pain, you don't make a decision to buy a house. But I you wouldn't believe the number of people I talk to who feel tremendous emotional pressure by the culture to go rush and buy something because somehow that's going to stabilize all this pain. That's going to fix everything. And it does just the opposite, because you make really bad decisions when you're in the middle of that much pain, when you're in the middle of all this turmoil in your life. Not the time to make a decision. Another example would be a military family. They're only in that location for a couple of years. Very seldom does that home go up enough in value that they can sell it, and so they're stuck with it. And then they go do it again, they're stuck with it. And then they go do it again, they're stuck with it. And they've got rental properties dotted all over the United States because they got stuck with them each time, because they didn't own them long enough to be able to sell them for a profit. So there's times that renting is a good idea. It's when it's temporary. Another time is sometimes when you move to a new city. It's not a bad idea to rent for a year and get to know the neighborhoods. Otherwise, you're kind of blindfolded when you're looking. Now, you can make a decision and you can go visit and study, and some people are able to do that if they move more, but I really want to know which side of the tracks things are, and I kind of want to know where the tracks are. You know, I want to know where I'm landing with this stuff. And so those are times that it is patience and wisdom as a temporary measure to rent until we get a solid foundation under us. When are you ready to buy? You're not ready to buy until you get through baby step three. That means you should be debt-free and have your emergency fund in place. Now, sometimes people stop right there, and in addition to their emergency fund, baby step three, they start saving for their down payment. We call that baby step 3B. Before they start retirement and college and that other stuff, they start piling up their down payment right there. That's a really good place to do that. But don't move into a home with 62 debts or 6 debts or 2 debts and no money. You move into a home broke with a bunch of debt around your neck, Murphy will move in your spare bedroom, bring his 3 cousins, broke, desperate, and stupid. They will live with you. Your life will look like a country song. Everything that can go wrong will. I mean, it is unbelievable what you'll be facing. You're asking for it when you move into a home broke. Now, why would we buy a home at all? Well, there's a lot of great benefits for home ownership. The first one is it's a forced savings plan. When you buy a home and you put down a good down payment, maybe you take out a mortgage, maybe you don't, but you're paying payments. If you're paying those monthly payments, as you're paying them, some of that's interest and some of that is reducing the principal. And so you're getting more and more equity in the home. You have a forced savings plan, and you can't get that money out easy. It's kind of locked in there. And so it causes you to build wealth. It's a great forced savings plan. The second thing is it's an inflation hedge. Now, in the last several decades, we haven't had a lot of inflation. I mean, but back in 1978 when I got my real estate license, that year, the inflation rate for real estate, residential real estate in our area and in most areas of the United States was around 12%. Houses were going up 10, 12% a year. $200,000 house a year later is worth 2.25%. I mean, that's wild. That's a couple of grand a month that thing's going up. And now we haven't seen that kind of inflation in a while. But if you own a home and that kind of inflation takes place, you're riding the wave up. If you don't own it and that kind of inflation takes place, you can get crushed by that wave. And so it's an inflation hedge because you participate in the one of the big components of what is inflation. It'd be like owning an oil company while gas went up, right? You know, you'd be on the right side of that equation then for a change. And that's what an inflation hedge is. The third thing is your house grows virtually tax-free. Your personal residence grows virtually tax-free. A personal residence under current tax law at the time of this shooting, you, as a married couple, married filing jointly, you can make up to $500,000 profit if you've owned the house 2 years or more. Tax-free. No taxes on it. You don't have to reinvest it. You don't have to buy another house. All those rules are years and years old. Just simply profit is yours up to $500,000. $250,000 for a single person. And so that's tax-free growth. That's pretty substantial. That's a big deal that you got that as an option in there. Now, what do we buy? When we start thinking about actually buying, we've gotten our emergency fund in place. We're out of debt. We're clarified how we're getting at this. We think it's a good idea to buy. What are we going to buy? Well, you want to buy in the bottom price range of the neighborhood. The bottom price range of the neighborhood, and never overbuild your neighborhood through home additions or improvements. So if you're looking at a home that's $400,000 and all the other homes in the neighborhood are $300,000, wrong. You want to be on the other end of that. As a matter of fact, if you could slip down under that $1.99 psychology, if the average home in the neighborhood is 3 to 3.25 and you could get something in the 280s or 290s, you're going to see the most appreciation from the bottom to the middle range of the neighborhood. Don't buy the most expensive home in that neighborhood, because when you get ready to resell, people aren't coming to that neighborhood to look for that price range. And if you buy a home and you add so much to it that now you have to get half again what the whole area is bringing just to get your money out, you've overbuilt the neighborhood, and you don't want to do that either. Homes appreciate in good neighborhoods and are priced based on three things, according to my appraisal teacher in college, and I think he's right. He says three things cause you to have value: location, location, and location. You can take a house trailer, a double wide, and sit it in the middle of a cornfield in Ohio, and it's worth $3,000. You can set it somewhere in Mississippi or in Tennessee, and it's worth $3,000. But if you set it on a 100-by-100 piece of sand right next to Malibu Beach, it's worth $1.2 million. Has everything to do with the location of what you're dealing with. When you get ready to buy, if you have the opportunity to, buy near water or buy something with a view. These are great things for resale. And really, it's funny to me how much you can get away with when you call it a view. Some of you people live in an area where it's just pancake flat, and any little bump is called a hill. And that house is on a view. You know what I'm saying? And it's amazing to me what people call water. I have seen some creeks that look suspiciously like drainage ditches. And the name of the street was Creekside. There wasn't a creek there. That was a drainage ditch. It's a wet weather creek, though, right? What? And the way the market perceives it is huge. This is huge. Buy bargains by learning to overlook things that can be fixed, like bad landscaping, ugly carpet, outdated wallpaper, and the Elvis print in the master bedroom. Some of you go through, and the other owner's decorating turns you off. That's not a reason not to buy a house. That's a reason to get a great deal on a house, because the average buyer has no imagination. So you need to go through and be able to look past that. You remember that shag carpet that you like needed a rake? You remember that? And you had to rake it a certain way, like your hair or something. It had to go a certain direction. It was like a comb over, but with carpet, you know? And you know, if it's got that in there, it's old, okay? And old carpet is not retro. It's just old carpet. Old tile might be retro. We can bring it back, right? But that there's nothing cool about old carpet. And so you need to overlook things that can be replaced quickly and easily like that. I used to buy real estate for a living and buy and sell for a living before I went broke. And I remember one time right after I went broke, I found a bargain. And this little couple that was in my Sunday school class at church, they wanted to buy a house. And so this was a long time ago. I found a great deal on this house. It was about $140,000, $160,000 house. And I was able to buy it for $60,000. But it was unbelievably poorly decorated. The worst paint colors, the worst carpet you've ever seen in your life. But I'm talking, you know, almost $100,000 off on the price, right? And they go over there and they're walking around and they're wringing their hands and they're thinking about it. And she comes out and she says, "We just can't buy it." "Why?" "I don't care, but I'm curious. Why?" We don't like the carpet." "It's $100,000 under market. Do you want to carpet the whole neighborhood?" "We can carpet the roof. I mean, anything you want to carpet for that." Just visualize ripping the carpet out. But she couldn't get past that. Didn't have the imagination to take a bargain. That's how you do it. You need to look past that kind of stuff and get yourself a bargain. Always buy a home that is or can be attractive from the street and has a good floor plan. I bought a house here in Tennessee one time. My very first home, as a matter of fact. I got a great deal on it. You know why? It was ugly. It was ugly to the bone. It was so ugly. It was on the side of a little hill on this little subdivision lot, and then he built like this thing that just stuck up there like a sore thumb. It was so nasty bad. You know the kind of house I'm talking about. And had a little driveway ran straight up to it. It was so steep that when you got to the bottom, you had to turn to keep your car from dragging. You know what I'm talking about. And one night I came home in an ice storm and I was trying to walk across that driveway. My parents were over visiting, watching the kids. The kids were little. And I slipped and I fell and I hit the driveway and I did Ninja Turtle all the way to the bottom. And I'm yelling and saying things you can't say in church. And my mother looks out the window and says to my wife, "Somebody's playing on your driveway." And you don't want to buy an ugly house like this, okay? You want to buy something that's got good bones to it and has a good solid floor plan. I had a house one time that was a rental house, had four bedrooms, but you had to go through one of the bedrooms to get to the other bedroom. Who was not thinking when they built this? These are two old boys that did the architecture on a brown bag on the hood of their pickup or something here, right? It was a bad idea. So if it's got bad bones, you can't fix that. You can fix the Elvis print and you can get rid of the shag carpet. Now, how do we buy? Real estate agents have full access to the multiple listing service, the MLS, and this can make house hunting really, really easy today. 89% of the buyers last year bought a home through a quality realtor. And so you want a professional if you're going to be working on the buyer or the selling side when you're dealing in the real estate world. It's a big deal. And search for a home using the internet listings. Stats are telling us right now that 90% of the people look for a home online and do online shopping. And so that's what you're doing as a buyer. And you need to remember that 89% of the buyers use a real estate agent ultimately before they do the purchase. But they shop on the internet. Now, if you're buying and you're shopping on the internet, I want you to make sure that you look past some of those people's ugly pictures, because some of those houses are better than they look on the internet. And that might be an opportunity for you to find a bargain because everyone else ruled it out based on their ugly picture. And it turns out it's a pretty nice place. It's just their realtor is not a very good photographer. When you buy a piece of property that is not a traditional subdivision lot, always get a survey. Always get a land survey if you're buying something that's not a standard subdivision lot. Now, some of you people live in areas of the country that when I fly over it, it looks like a little checkerboard, and it's all pretty and nice. I'm in Tennessee. The surveys in Tennessee read something like, "Starts at an old oak tree and goes to a pile of rocks, neither one of which are still there." And so you have to figure this thing out. And the last three generations of relatives have been exaggerating every generation. It really is about 20 acres. By the time it gets around to them exaggerating it, it's now up to 40. And so you really do need to have it surveyed to really know what you're getting into. And if you're buying a home, always have a professional home inspector structurally certify the home. Really get into it. Really see what it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. And sellers don't like it because they don't want to be nitpicked, but it'll keep you out of some huge messes like mold or roof leaks or heating and air systems that are on their last legs or those kinds of things. Because when you and I are buying, we get all excited about the house. We get house fever. And we tend to overlook some things that might be a little bit obvious, and you want to be wise. You want to have all the information to make your decisions with as you're buying it. Now, get an appraisal. Most of you, if you're getting a mortgage, you're going to be required to get an appraisal. But understand, an appraisal is an opinion of value. And some of these appraisers have been burnt by some of these economic turns and some of these bank laws and different things. And they're a little paranoid, some of them. And some of them are a little bit of a Barney Fife power trip. I was selling a piece of property a while back, and we had the contract written up for $262,500. And of course, the appraiser got a copy of the contract. We also furnished the appraiser with all of the comparables in the area to make his job easy for him. And Mr. Power Trip comes back, not with $262,500. He appraised the house at $262,250. Like, you know, that close what this house is worth, you know. So, you know, it's an opinion. So be willing to push back, be willing to fight about that a little bit. But you do want an outside third party to tell you what the thing is worth, because, again, we get house fever in the process. Title insurance insures you against an unclean title when your property ownership is called into question. Always buy title insurance. Circle that and put stars around it. Always, with any real estate you buy title insurance. Well, that's just one of those rip-off closing costs. That's just one of those fees they throw on there. Another way they make money on us. Yes, they make money on you. But I have bought foreclosures. I've owned over 1,000 pieces of property in my life. I've seen more title messed up than you can imagine. I bought a piece of property one time with title insurance, thank goodness, from an estate. The two sisters signed off on it. Somehow they forgot they had a brother. Maybe they thought he would never turn up. 2 years later, mystery brother shows up. Turns out I'm his new partner. And he wants me to sign off and give him money to get his signature to get the other third of the house. I don't have clean title. The three heirs hadn't all signed it. And there was some issues there. So what did I do? Well, normally, if I didn't have title insurance, I'd be a little freaked out and have to be handling all of this. Instead, I just called the title insurance company. They wrote Mystery Boy a check. He signed the stuff. No problems to me. This is why you get title insurance. They ensured that the title was clean, so they had to pay to make it clean when it wasn't. Always get title insurance. Now, I want to have one of my favorite speakers talk to you about mortgages, because this guy really knows his stuff. He goes all over America doing financial talks for me, teaching biblical finance, but he really knows the mortgage business and the banking business because I saved him from it. I pulled him out of there, and he works on our team. Please welcome Chris Hogan.
Hello, everybody. As you can imagine, after 20 years of dealing with money and people, I've met a lot of people getting ready to try to buy a home. And as you can imagine, I've seen people do it right, and I've seen people do it wrong. We'll start with the wrong way. This was a couple, they'd been married about 3 years, and they had gotten house fever. Okay, you know what I'm talking about? See, they had friends buying homes, and they had family members buying homes, so they thought that they needed to. See, they were confusing want with need. You ever been there? It's so easy to do. And so they said, Chris, we're renting right now, but we want to start a family. And I said, okay, I can respect that. I can understand that. And they said, and here's the statement they made. We can't bring a baby home to an 800 square foot apartment. Seriously? Now, I'm thinking to myself, this is just an 8-pound baby. Okay, all they do, right, all they do is eat, sleep, and stuff, right, that first year. Like, 800 square foot apartment, that's enough space. I'm thinking, did you buy like a 400 square foot baby crib? You can make this work. And see, they were confused, and I even told them so. It's like, listen, you all are getting confused with want versus need. You're not in a position yet. You're not following a plan. You don't have money saved up. You still have debt. Now, the right way, another couple, they've been married 5 years. They've been attacking debt. See, they've been sacrificing. They're working together, and they came in to see me because, see, they had saved up some money, but they weren't quite there yet. Okay, they wanted to do 20% down. So they were focused. Now, when they came in to meet with me, she was 4 months pregnant. And here's what she told me. She goes, Chris, I really want a house. Now, I'm pregnant, so I'm a little tense. That was like a warning right there, okay? Which meant she could go off on me. She goes, I'm a little tense, but we're focused on getting this house before the baby gets here. And she said, now, we have some stuff we can sell. Now, she kept using we a lot, okay? And every time she said we, the husband would kind of tick, okay? And I knew something was coming, you all. She goes, yeah, we got some stuff. I said, okay, and I picked up on the hint. She goes, we have a boat and a motorcycle, okay? And the guy, bless his heart, he looked so pitiful. He was looking at me like, help me. And I was looking at him like, I can't. She's pregnant. Ain't no sense both of us getting beat up in that room. I'm like, buddy, you on your own, okay? So guys, single, if you're single out here, men's survival tip. Don't argue with a pregnant woman, okay? Put that in your book. Go on. Write it down. But this couple was focused. See, they were working together and sacrificing. He eventually came on board. He was fine to give those things up because he knew he could get some other stuff later. But they had grown to bring me to my first point, to hate debt. This is the first thing. You have to hate debt. You don't want to get confused. And I know we've been raised not to hate. I know. For example, Mama Hogan, that's my mom. She raised me. She said, Christopher. Now, you all, when she used my whole first name, it was like a tip, okay? Because I think one of the three W's were coming when she said Christopher. See, I'm normally Chris, but when Christopher came up, one or three W's were about to happen. She was either going to give me some wisdom, she was going to give me a warning, or I was about to get a whooping. Okay? So when she said Christopher, my ears automatically, everything stopped. She goes, we don't hate people. But I understand that, and I respect that. But I want to give you all permission tonight to hate debt. Because it's a thief. It steals from us. Think about it. It makes our income outgone. Think about that. It is a thief. So we do want to hate it. So I tell people the best way to buy a home, put 100% down. 100%. Put the whole thing down. And people say, well, Chris, you can't do 100% down. Yes, you can if you're focused. You can. Now, a lot of people don't have the patience to do it, but you can do it. For example, we have a Dave Ramsey team member. She grew up in a family that had real-world money struggles. And we've all been there. We know what that's like. But she grew up and she made the decision to herself she was never going to have debt. She wasn't going to do it. Not a credit card, not a loan. She started saving up for a home at age 17, making $3,000 to $5,000 a year in investing, putting money away, stayed focused. Okay, she stayed focused. She met the man of her dreams. He didn't have any debt, so they're working together now. Teamwork, it's a beautiful thing. So now they're bringing in about $95,000 together. You know what they did? They decided, you know what, we'll live off his income and we'll save hers. So they continued the habit of saving. So you can do it. You got to sacrifice, though. They saved up about $135,000. $135,000. So when it came time for them to go shop for a home, do you think they spent everything? Absolutely not. See, they only spent $119,000, but paid cash for a house. So it can be done if you're focused, and you have to be committed to that. Listen to this stat, according to the Census Bureau. 31% of homes in the United States have no mortgage debt on them at all. 31%. That's big. So listen, it sounds like to me that this whole area of being debt-free and whole concept is really catching on. People are starting to get it. So if you're not going to do 100% down, here's the plan. I want you to get a mortgage payment of no more than 25% of your take-home pay on a 15-year fixed with 10% down. That's the game plan. You're going to hear me say have a plan all throughout this lesson. That's the plan. No more mortgage payment of no more than 25% of your take-home pay on a 15-year fixed rate with a 10% down payment. Now, you can put more down if you want, and I want you to. See, the temptation here as you're buying a home, it's great to overspend. It's real easy. So you have to have a plan. You have to be committed. Now, I point out this whole area of a 15-year fix because it's a big deal. See, I'm a former banker, okay? But as a banker, anybody in the financial world, if you go talk to them about getting a mortgage, they're going to push you toward a 30-year loan. That's just the natural instinct. So I want you, as you go in to buy a home, to know that the 15-year is the way I want to go. That's the direction. Don't get swayed. You go in confirmed, I want a 15-year. And I want to show you, if you would, take a look at this slide and you'll see the difference here. For example, on a $225,000 loan, 15-year payment is going to be around $1,900. But then you see on a 30-year loan, it's going to be about $1,400. So that's a difference of almost $600 a month. But take a look at the next fact. After 10 years of paying on this, 10 long years of chipping away at this thing and making progress, your balance now on the 15-year loan is $98,000. But look at the 30-year, almost double at $188,000. So you've paid on this thing almost $162,000 on a 30-year, but look what you've paid the balance down by, only $36,000. The 15-year is the way to go. It represents hundreds of thousands saved in interest. Now I want to tell you about something. Horrible mortgage options. And I want you to look at my face, okay? When you hear these options, I want you to run, okay? I scared somebody half to death in there. I want you to run if you see these, okay? I don't care. Wives, if you're sitting at a bank or a financial institution and somebody mentions one of these options, I want you to get your purse, your keys, and your kids and go, all right? If your husband won't move, leave him. He'll meet you at the house. Go on. Go. You got to get out of there. Because these are dangerous. These will cost you money. After 20 years in the industry of looking, I know for a fact. The first one is an adjustable rate mortgage. Adjustable rate mortgage, ARM. Now, I've got a better acronym for them. I call them ain't right mortgages. Because they ain't right. Okay? On average, here's what happens. You get an interest rate right now, and after a certain point, it adjusts. Now, which way is it going to adjust? Up or down? Up. And if that goes up, what's your payment going to do? Up. Say up is bad.
Up is bad.
Yeah. Oh, y'all like y'all. Up is bad. You don't want it to go up. You want something that's going to be consistent. So here's the deal on adjustable rate mortgages. The ARM, the concept is to transfer the risk of the higher interest rate to the borrower in exchange for a lower interest rate now. So it's almost like a teaser rate. You don't want to go there. Remember, if you're budgeting, you're fixed on money. You're telling money where to go each time, each month. You don't need it fluctuating. So if you do have an adjustable rate mortgage today, I encourage you to get out, get with someone, a banker, a mortgage person, and get information on refinancing into a 15-year fixed rate. That's going to be the best way for you. And get some information to be able to help you. Now, another bad one is interest only. Interest-only loans. These are a bad idea because why? You're just paying the interest. And I tell people, if you're not making principal progress, you're not making buying progress. Think about that. If you're just paying interest, it's almost like just treading water. You're not making any progress. So you want to make principal and interest progress. That means buying progress. Interest-only are a banker's dream. They love them. All right? They love them, and they want people to stay in there. Another one, reverse mortgages. Now, we've all heard about these, right? You see the commercials. You see the ancient heartthrobs from the 50s and 60s pushing these things. You've seen them. And you go, I remember that person from this show or that person from that show. They're trying to build credibility. These loans can be very expensive and can have high fees. Now, I tell you this because I want you to be forewarned, but I also want you to be able to protect your parents and your grandparents. Because, see, these loans, you have to be 62 years old or older to even qualify for these loans. So that's what they're targeting. But I tell people this with reverse mortgages. You have made payments each and every month. Each and every month. We're going forward, aren't we? Each month. The last thing we want to do is do what? Go in reverse. Think about it. You can see the finish line. You have run. You have pushed. You can see it. It's right over there. We don't want to go back. We've worked too hard to get to here. So you want to keep that in mind. Do your research. High rates, high fees. Another myth and a bad mortgage option is the accelerated biweekly payoff programs that you see out there. Now, these programs, they try to get you, convince you that there's some magic software or some mortgage genie out there that can attack your mortgage and pay it all faster. I'm here to tell you, you don't need to pay someone $400 to $600 a year to pay extra on a mortgage when you can do it. See, you're the secret weapon. You want to have the attitude that this mortgage is going to get out of my life, I'm going to throw extra money at it, I'm going to work extra, and I'm going to attack this thing and get it gone. There is no magic software out there that's going to do that for you. So don't buy into that. And then there's another myth. And it's the tax advantage of a mortgage, that you shouldn't pay off the home, that you want to hold on to it. And I can remember having a discussion with an accountant. Okay, he had a pocket protector and a calculator. And we debated on this, seriously, because I realized, see, in his mind, he crunches numbers. Okay, but what I teach people to do, I crush debt. So we were already opposed. But we went through it, and he was saying, Chris, you need to hold on to it for the tax advantage. And I'm saying, listen, I want people to pay off the mortgage and keep their payment to themselves. And we had this debate. And I want to show you all this so you can see this and don't fall for this anymore. For example, here, on a $200,000 mortgage at 5%, you're going to pay about $10,000 in interest to the bank each year. Now, that's donated to the bank. But if you were to pay off your mortgage and hold on to that $10,000, you would pay 25% in taxes, okay? And so you'd pay $2,500 to the government. So you get to hold on to your money. Now, I want to show you something because I brought a friend with me. Actually, I brought 10,000 of them. And I want you to see this because, see, we talk about numbers so much that, see, money becomes just a number with that little sign on it. But this is real here. This is real money. And so you look at this and you realize that, you know what? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that I would keep my mortgage and send all of this to the bank as opposed to keeping the money, paying off my mortgage, holding on to this, and sending $2,500 to the government. I get to keep this. And some people will say, I want the tax deduction, Chris. Here's my thought. Pay off the mortgage and take this $10,000 and give it to your church or charity. How many people's lives could you rock with this? How many people could you bless with this? So this is simple math. We're not falling for that myth anymore because we know better. Now, I'm going to put my friend away so he can go back to sleep and we can keep moving. But I want you to lace up your shoes with me because we're getting ready to run through some basic ways you can finance your home. And I'm going to move pretty quick, so track with me here. The first one is obviously a conventional loan. Now, these loans are done through Fannie Mae and are privately insured against default. These have more structures, more guidelines, and hoops you have to jump through, but they're the best overall deal for you. So they also have what's called private mortgage insurance, PMI. Now, I want to clear up a myth here because a lot of people think that the PMI protects them. It does not. PMI insurance protects the lender against default. So think of it as foreclosure insurance. It protects the bank, not you as an individual. So you don't want to have this on your loan. Now, if you put a 20% down payment, you won't have it at all. You won't be affected with a 20% down payment. If you've been in your home a little while and you've paid the mortgage down and you've got 20% equity, you can contact your lender and get information about how to get this drop from your loan. So you can contact your lender and have that conversation. Now, another option are FHA loans. Now, FHA loans are insured by HUD, the federal government. These are heavily marketed to first-time homebuyers. Heavily marketed. And the reason is down payments can be as low as 3%. So people fall for it and look at it and they say, well, I don't want to be patient. I want to hurry up and get in these loans in a home. So I'm going to take this loan. I want to caution you. Okay, these loans are currently more expensive than a conventional loan. So conventional is better for you to go that route. Now, we love our veterans. We love the fact that they've defended our country. They protect our freedom. Another loan out are VA loans. Now, these are insured by the Department of Veterans Affairs. And you have to be careful, though. Okay, now you can get in one of these with a VA loan. You can get in for zero down. The seller pays all the costs. But the issue is it can have a funding fee. Now, this funding fee can be 1.25% to 3%. Now, it depends on, number one, your years of service, and how many VA loans you've had prior. So you want to be aware and do your math. But still, with a good down payment, a conventional loan is still better than a VA loan. So you're hearing a theme here. I keep saying conventional. That's the way to go. Owner financing is another option. And this is where you pay an individual over time, making that person your mortgage holder. So this is, you don't have a bank or a mortgage company. You have an individual that you're working with. Okay, now you can be very creative here. This is a great way to finance a home if you have one of these, because you can structure it to where there are what? Graduated interest rates over time. You can get sweat equity. You can get credit for renovations or whatever you're doing to a home. The one thing I caution people is if you have one of these, an owner financing type of situation, get it in writing. Get it in writing. Have you all ever talked to someone and they told you something, they agree to it, and then get amnesia later? They forget all about what they told you and what they agreed to. If you get it in writing and you've got it signed and you've got it notarized, now when they catch amnesia, what are you going to do? I'm just going to go over here and grab this little reminder here and help jog their memory. This will protect you. And that's the big thing to remember. Now, a home is a person's largest monetary asset. It's a big deal. I need you to have a plan so you can protect yourself, so you can defend yourself and be able to know that, hey, this is my family's legacy that I'm talking about here. I've got to defend myself. I've got to have a plan and be focused. I tell people to slow down. You want to slow down and use Chris's 3 C's of home buying. You want to be cautious, you want to be careful, and you want to be coherent. Now think about those. You want to be cautious, you want to be careful, and you want to be coherent as you address this whole issue of home buying. Because it's a big deal. It's a big step. It's a big deal to have a plan, you all. It really and truly is. And you have to take this area seriously. Remember what Davis told you. Attack your debt, okay? Have an emergency fund, and then save up to buy a home. Don't get confused about the process. That's the plan to follow. It works. Now, there are some other opportunities and challenges related to real estate and mortgages. And I'm going to turn it back over to Dave so he can tell you more about those. So please welcome Dave Ramsey.
All right, let's look at some of the challenges and opportunities that are out there when it comes to mortgages and real estate. If you do what we teach, meaning we get you completely out of debt and you quit borrowing money, eventually your credit score is going to disappear. Well, we talk about that in the debt lesson in detail, how we want Mr. FICO to go away. If you close all of the accounts and they all have zero balances and there's no activity on your credit bureau report at all for 6 months, you won't have a credit score anymore. That's according to FICO's guidelines. And how are you going to buy a house in that situation? Well, you're going to do what's called manual underwriting. You find a mortgage lender that does manual underwriting. Sometimes they call it no credit score or non-traditional credit. Now, you can't live in your father's basement and do manual underwriting. You have to have been out in the world paying bills. And so you've got utility bills. You've been paying your rent earlier on time for 2 years. You've been on the job earlier on time for 2 years. You make money. You have a bank account. You show interaction with people. But it doesn't have to be a debt instrument in order to qualify. Manual underwriting with non-traditional credit can get you processed without it being a dime more expensive. But you have to find a mortgage company who actually knows how to do this, and probably less than half of them do it anymore. So you're going to have to do a little bit of work on your part, but you can still get the mortgage. Now, when you owe more on your home than it is currently worth, we call that in the real estate business upside down. A lot of people have gotten very familiar with that term in the last few years. But the deal is this. Your upside down is not a big problem as long as your life hasn't changed. You know, you just owe more on the house than it's worth. But if you're still got the same job, you still got the same budget, you can still pay the payment. You just sit there and pay the payment and let the market recover, and you're going to be just fine. The problem comes is when you need to move for some reason. You're transferred to another city. You're stuck in that thing. You may have to rent it out for a while. Or you get to where you lost a job or something like that, and you can't pay the payment anymore. What do we do then? Well, when you're facing a foreclosure, The next best thing to a foreclosure is a short sale. In a short sale, the home is sold for less than the amount owed, and the lien holder agrees to accept the proceeds from the home sale as payment in full. And so you owe $200,000. They do an appraisal on the property. They figure out after they foreclose on you, they're only going to get $150,000. So they just go ahead and take $150,000 now for the debt and let you go free, and the buyer buys it for $150,000. And you want to do a short sale without recourse. But a short sale is not a method of just, I want to move to a bigger house and I'm going to sell my house, because this is just to the left of foreclosure. This drops the hammer on your credit. It's almost like being foreclosed on, except they don't sue you for the difference later. That's the big difference. So do a short sale just before foreclosure, but not as a matter of convenience. Now, there's a phrase that's been out there rattling around that's bothering me, and I want to talk about it for a little bit. Willfully walking away from a mortgage, even when you have the money to make the payments, is called strategic default. Now, that's a nice flowery phrase that says, I signed an agreement and gave my word. I can honor my word, but it's no longer convenient. And so I'm just going to walk away. This house has gone down in value. I owe more on it than it's worth, and I want to move, and I don't care. Well, that's immoral. That's breaking your word, and that's a lack of integrity. You signed up for this trip. Now, if you can't pay the payment because you're getting foreclosed on, then we go to a short sale situation. But this idea of like, oh, it's never going to come back. Translation, I'm in drama mode because I want to move. It is going to come back. And so just walking away just because it's inconvenient is what strategic default is. And I got to tell you, that's wrong. It's the wrong thing to do. And I'm not going to participate in showing you how to do that or encouraging you or anyone else to do that. It's unethical. If you want some details about short sales and about being upside down and about strategic default and where things work and how this stuff falls, you can always check the website. We'll bring it up today. Now, we bought a home. We've talked about renting. Chris helped you with the mortgages. Let's talk about selling a home. When you get ready to sell a home, you need to think like a retailer. How many of you have ever visited a new subdivision with a furnished model that was absolutely drop dead? Better Homes and Gardens, awesome. Tell me you've been in a model home, everybody. Most everybody has. When you walk in there, you're dealing with a retail situation. They have painted the picture the way they wanted you to visualize it. Lots of thought has gone into the color of the couch, the situation of the couch, how the dining room table is set up, what art is on the wall, what the closets look like. Lots of thought has gone into this because they're retail. They are selling. This is their example. When you're selling your home, you have to think like that. You have to change your mindset. We got ready to sell one of our homes. Our kids were little, and I told them, I said, if there is any sign that you live here when someone comes to look at the house, you will not be living here anymore. We will send you away. And that means that Kitty and Puppy are probably going to go visit Grandma. Because a great big nice dog, I love big dogs. I'm a big dog guy. But I don't even want to meet one at the front door of a house I'm getting ready to buy, because it immediately says things about this house. Think like a retailer. Take half of your stuff off your kitchen counters and box it. You're not using it. Or put it under the cabinets, one of the two. Take a bunch of the stuff in the cabinets that you're not using and go ahead and box that and put it in there. Because a cabinet that is chocked full is small cabinets. This place doesn't have enough cabinet space. When people open it up and stuff falls out, that's what it says to them. So go ahead and take a bunch of that out. Room in the cabinets says, wow, they've got a lot of cabinet space. Same thing for your closets. Take half of your stuff out of your closets. You're moving anyway, right? You need to get some of this stuff out of your house and put light bulbs in. I want you to personally create a drain on energy. Personally. 100 watt, lots of lights. Every light in the house is on before they come to look at it. Light opens up all the corners. Darkness is small. Light is big. Little bitty bedrooms aren't necessarily little bitty when they're well lit. Lots of lights on all kinds of things. Accent lights, everything. Lots and lots of lights. Have someone come in who loves you enough to tell you if your house smells. Bake bread right before they come. Bake chocolate chip cookies right before they come. I don't know how to do that. Get vanilla extract. Put it on the oven and turn the oven on. It'll smell like you baked something. Candles that have scent are really a good idea, but not so much that you knock me down with the perfume when I come in. So be thoughtful. Be thinking about you are in the marketing business. Walk out in the street. Look back at the house. Think about what it looks like from the curb. This is a big deal. You need to think through these things. Now, the return on investment of fix-up dollars is absolutely enormous, especially on items that are $1,000 and less. $1,000 of paint will paint half the universe. It's amazing what you could do with that. $1,000 of 409 will clean a lot of grubby handprints. $1,000 will go a long way with some elbow grease toward getting a house ready to sell. But people think, well, I just live here. I'm just putting a sign in the yard. You're not going to sell it. And if you do, they're going to beat you up on price because you're competing with other people who got their house market ready before they put it on the market. Think like a retailer. The most important aspect of preparation is attention to the curb appeal. Walk out in the street and look at the house. Now, I told you a little bit earlier, 90% of buyers are viewing the home online now on the internet before they go actually look at the home. Guess what they're seeing? The picture from the curb. That picture needs to be a work of art. But stand in the street and think, I'm looking at this house. What is wrong with this from the curb? Because, you know, in a job interview, the first 30 seconds, a lot of employers make their decision before you've even opened your mouth, based on the way you look when you walk up. The same thing's true with curb appeal. That's your first impression. You never have a second chance to make a first impression. You ever heard your dad and mom say that? Same thing's true with your house. Get that curb appeal ready. Trim those bushes. Trim those trees. Make everything lined up. Make it look like a little park. And, you know, you're just thinking that, you know, Thumper Rabbit is somewhere around here, right? You just have this sense, this feel of, oh, I can see my kids playing in that yard. But if there's a bunch of trash sitting around and stuff, you can't do that. You have to stand in the yard, look at it and say, and then walk up the driveway, park where you think they're going to park and get out. Look around and go, uh-oh, cobweb up there in the corner. We've got a gutter right there. We need to fix that. And then walk down the sidewalk. Make sure the sidewalk is edged and really good mulch and nice trees right there as you're going along. And then, by the way, when they go to the front door, they have to get the little lock thing open. And so they're standing there a while. So they're looking around. So stand there for a minute or two and look around and go, uh-oh, I've got to paint this front door. And let me tell you, your little kids' handprints and face prints on the front door, that's all sweet to you. The rest of us think you need to clean your house. Okay? It's not cute. Clean it. This is a retail thing you're doing here. All those little things are going to make you a ton of money when you get ready to sell. These are the tricks of the trade for real estate professionals. This is the stuff they tell you to do. When selling your home, make sure that it is listed on the internet and check the pictures. Because I can't tell you how many times I've looked at those pictures and they're awful. And people use that to rule you out and never gave you a fair shot simply because of some cheesy, bad, poorly thought out photography. Somebody just going click, 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 like it's Facebook or something. You're marketing a several $100,000 asset here. Act like it. Act like it. When selling, statistical research has found that the best real estate agents are worth more than they cost. Unless you personally are a seasoned pro at this, unless you've done multiple transactions yourself. Now, here's the deal. The realtors have done detailed research, lots of detailed surveys and statistical analysis. Nationally, in the last 5 years, here's the numbers. The average FSBO, we call them, for sale by owners, sold their home for $150,000. The average same house sold through a realtor, $215,000. $65,000 more on average. Now, that's very interesting. That says that a quality realtor is going to get more for the house. Well, think about it. You don't have the ability to list the house in the multiple listing service, in the MLS. And the MLS is where people go when the buyer is going through an agent to look for property. They dial right straight into the MLS and find out stuff that's in the area. Now, think about this. If you personally had 10,000 potential buyers and I had 5 buyers, who's going to get the most for the house? You. 10,000 buyers, right? If you've got 10,000 people looking at this house and I got 5 looking at it, on average, the person with 10,000 is going to get more for the house, get it sold quicker, and get it sold more often. And that's what a quality realtor does. Now, I don't care if you use a realtor or not. I'm giving you the statistical evidence. You do whatever you want to do. I can tell you this. I am a licensed real estate broker. I do not market properties personally or anything like that. But at the end of the day, if I get ready to sell my personal residence, I'm going to use a realtor. Because of those same things, because I'm not actively engaged in it, even though I still invest in real estate. I'm not on the retail side of it. It's not what I do every day. I don't have time to fool with it. And so they're going to do a better job for me. When selecting an agent, don't rely on friendships or relatives. Everyone in this room, everyone watching this knows five or six people in the real estate business. Everybody does. And most of them are not the people you need to use. Most of them aren't. You need to find the top high-octane, high-protein professional. You should interview at least three agents. You're hiring someone you're going to pay tens of thousands of dollars to. Don't just hire somebody you never met before. They should be able to come in and present to you and sell you and show you how professional they are. If they can't show you that, when they get ready to sell your house, they don't know how to do it. So this needs to be somebody who's on top of things, like returns phone calls. How quick did they respond when you talked to them? Those kinds of things, because that's how quick they're going to respond to the people calling them about your house. Took them 3 days to get back to you about listing your house. Going to take them 4 days to get back to that buyer. You're going to lose them. So you need to have people that are on top of their game. That's what we're looking for here. Have your agent do a detailed comparative market analysis, the CMA it's called. And all this is you're pulling comparable houses that have sold in the area recently to compare to yours. Now, when they do that, they're going to establish and show you with statistical evidence based on that what your home is really worth. Most sellers have what we call emotional equity. Translation, they think their house is worth more than it is because it's theirs. Emotional equity doesn't count. What the house is worth is what the house is worth. And it's pretty easy to establish that based on other homes in the area that have actually sold. So overall, real estate represents home. Real estate represents our family. This is where our children are going to grow up. It's where our dog and kitty are. This is where it feels good to come back to after travel. And we all have this sense, even like Jesus said, that we need a place to lay our head. We need a place spiritually and emotionally, relationally, that we call home. So I recommend you do this. I recommend you get a home. And that you work through the process of paying cash for it or paying it off very, very quickly. Because I've done detailed research and 100% of the foreclosures occur on a home with a mortgage. So get that thing paid off. Let that be your place where you lay your head. When that type of foundation is under your financial plan, you are poised then to launch. But doing it improperly, doing it when you're not yet ready, pushing the edge of the envelope because the culture says you gotta buy, you gotta buy, you gotta buy, is a bad idea. So go slowly, carefully, but let this be one of your financial goals. Let's take our 1 minute and you write out what you learned that you got to take away from this lesson. Go.
Thank you for listening to Financial Peace University, Lesson 8, Real Estate and Mortgages. please visit DaveRamsey.com/FPU for further information. This audio is copyrighted 2012 by Lampo Licensing, LLC. All rights reserved, 1749 Mallory Lane, Brentwood, Tennessee, 37027. This audio recording is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. If legal advice or other expert professional assistance is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.